Hi, I'm Wendy Francis, nutrition therapist, emotional eating expert, and entrepreneur. I've helped countless people overcome their obsession with food and weight. Isn't it time you overcame what you had become and ignite who you were meant to be? Your time to become an overcomer starts now.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me for a special edition of Overcoming. This call went on for quite a while, and the reality is based on the information that I gave on PCOS on the beginning of this call led to this magnanimous revelation, and I would almost call it a beginning of a revolution in what I learned about PCOS, in what clients learned on this call about PCOS, and how we were able to bring our heads together, to wrap our heads around what I learned, what I brought to the call, and then what these women processed. Honored to hear them speak about this and begin to tell their story about what their life was like with PCOS and potentially how we can begin to change women's lives by just really looking at some true and tried simple facts to help their bodies overcome PCOS, to enable them to flourish and lead amazing, healthful lives. Take a listen. All right, anybody, any questions, comments? I feel like I probably could have gone on for a lot longer with that, but I wanted to at least just give the caller that wanted some more information on PCOS that this due diligence. And caller, if you're on, I'd love to hear from you too if you have any questions about the dive in further to PCOS.
This is, and I'm not sure if it's myself or if I have another partner on this line that emailed today on the PCOS along with my thyroid, but I thank you for the conversation and the research that you've done. And I have no problems in saying I'm through menopause. I'm 60 years old, so I don't have the menstrual now, but I did have that and the heavy bleeding and the difficulty becoming pregnant and carrying a full term pregnancy. But at this point in my life, this is the first and only, I don't want to call it a diet, but an eating habit of structure, the anti-inflammatory that's allowing me to even lose any weight. It has been my golden ticket, you want to say, that's given me hope. I started on 313. I'm down 16.4 pounds, which to me is phenomenal. I look forward to more, but I think it's truly what you said, the anti-inflammatory diet because of the insulin resistance. Mm-hmm. I mean, the facial hair, I have that. I just feel so much better already in just a little over a month. And my sleeping has changed. My breathing has changed. And I'm becoming more active. So thank you for delving into this. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm like a true test case here of appreciation of where has this been that I didn't realize it could help me.
Yeah, well, thank you so very much. That's kind of what I saw today, too. When I have learned, I mean, you guys opened my eyes up to this because I have worked with patients with PCOS, and in the research, I never got the connection. I got the insulin resistance and the androgens and the irregular menstruation, et cetera. But because so much in the last 2 to 5 years has come on board with inflammation and what diseases it's impacting, that I finally felt like I got it today, was like that inflammation and PCOS, as I talked about before, inflammation and diabetes, inflammation and cancer, inflammation and heart disease, inflammation and osteoarthritis and autoimmune diseases. Like, I made all those connections, but I didn't realize the impact of inflammation and PCOS. And it's pretty radical because even though the inflammation is low grade, the amount that it impacts the insulin resistance and the androgen production is really significant, which then radically impacts PCOS. So thank you. And yeah, you are kind of a test case. So thank you for your testimonial. Ooh. Because my hope is to get this out to more people now that have PCOS and can be relieved of these symptoms.
Hello, Wendy.
Yep. I just want to say thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wanted to thank you, Wendy.
No, thank you. I mean, I have to thank you guys for this one because, I mean, it's like like I said, I really, when I said that, when I read the inflammation being the fourth cause, I really literally was like, what? Wait a minute, I need to read that again. Because here it is again, right? Like inflammation and impacting disease status. So I want to thank you as well. Other caller had something. Someone else was trying to hop on.
Hi, this is I was the caller that asked you for this PCOS topic, and I'm so thankful that you did cover it because it does, it's like the other caller said, it's a struggle that you live with all your life. Mm-hmm. And trying to just deal with your period and hair on your face when you're not supposed to be having hair on your face. It really takes a hit on how you project yourself and your confidence, and how do you deal with your food and your body image and all of that. Because, for example, my sister and my mom didn't have any symptoms that I did, so they can't relate. So it's kind of difficult for me to try to express what I'm going through when nobody else seems to be going through the same thing. So I'm so thankful that you did cover all of this. I did not know about the low grade inflammation. So that's really very interesting. So thank you. Thank you again.
Yeah. Thank you for asking me to do this. You know, that's why I open it up at times, because I want to hear what people are, you know, working through and struggling with. And I've had many clients, you know, with PCOS, and they weren't able to get a significant amount of help. And I say that lovingly. I know that everybody's trying to help people with PCOS, so I don't mean it in that way, but they were put on, you know, some medications that made things worse, and, you know, then had some other altered, you know, things that happened to them because of those meds, and tried some meds that did work, but there wasn't the surefire things. Like I read today was like, okay, first and foremost, like, you know, if you think about it, right, eat an anti-inflammatory diet. That's not that hard. You can find lots of great, easy ways to do that. And over the course of a few months, it can radically make you feel better, as well as help with the androgen production, because I can't, you know, hormones can do funny things, right? to all of us women. They can put hair on our face. They can take hair off our head. They can, because I was reading about high androgen production and how there's a woman balding pattern that can occur because of an increase in androgen production. It's a specific kind of alopecia, but it's not the alopecia that you might, I hate to use that word because a lot of people know alopecia in different ways. But there's a male balding pattern that can happen in females when they have an increase in androgen production too. So you can get hair on your face and lose the hair on your head. And I don't know what might be worse for self-esteem than either one or both of those for females. So I can only imagine how difficult it is. And the clients that I've had that have struggled with infertility, it's been heartbreaking to watch them go through that. And so, you know, those were the things that I knew about it. But wow, what a really cool thing to see how you can quickly and effectively get some help without having to do, you know, something so major. But you can change those androgen levels by eating anti-inflammatory and by moving your body 20 to 30 minutes, 3 to 4 times a week. It becomes a little bit easier.
And it's quite frustrating that you, at least in my case, I've gone to specialists and doctors and everything, and they just gave me birth control pills.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't really help. They never even suggested a healthier diet or reduce X, Y, and Z from your diet or whatever. And it's interesting that I started in February, and since February to now, I've seen a lot of changes in my health that I've been trying for years that has not happened. Seeking medical help, which is weird.
Wow. I agree with you. This is again Jasenia, and I'm right there with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they put me on metformin because of my age, not the birth control, that which still could have been at this age for that purpose, but I take metformin, which I would love to get off of that, but no one ever opened my eyes to a dietary change of, you know, to help with the androgen production.
I mean, it's pretty astounding. And in my experience from the clients that I have had with PCOS, their practitioners, whoever it was, didn't ever mention diet or exercise. It really was birth control pills or metformin that they were tried on. And the women that I worked with had adverse reactions to birth control pills, because birth control pills are hormones, so they can, you know, sometimes do funny things to your body too. So then they had, so then they had those things. So it's really been, I wish I could call those women back and tell them, hey, I think we figured out how to start. At least a way to start would be in this arena, right? With these things that don't have any side effects. And then, and only then, if you then need kind of a second level, so to speak, or it's not clearing up enough, you know, then what do you want to do from there as a strategic intervention? But why don't we start with the simple stuff first? Because the simple stuff can be the most effective because there's no side effects you're chasing.
Agreed.
Cannot agree more.
Yeah. So, yeah, and you guys are testimonials to this, realistically, because, you know, now I want to, like, shout it from the rooftops and be like, hey, I think we might have figured something out. Can somebody help me do some research, please?
Yeah.
So we can get some statistics so people will listen.
You're giving us hope.
Well, good. Because it does, from what I'm reading and what you're experiencing, right? So what you're experiencing lines up directly with what I'm reading. And so you then know, like I then know, we're onto something. And so you can, and the amount of research that I have done on inflammation and healing that inflammation and how radically it impacts the body then is astounding. We have underestimated that component for centuries. And it's only in the last 1 to 2 years that I'm hearing about it from bigger figureheads. But before then, people would kind of try to talk about inflammation and anti-inflammatory diets, and it would just kind of die on the vine, so to speak. Then you'd have another paleo diet or another keto diet, or, you know, and there's nothing wrong with those. I'm just saying, like, you'd have another, what I call a fad diet, right? Something that's labeled. Nobody, you know, just recently are people really kind of touting the anti-inflammatory diet, and hopefully we'll continue to do that so we can get some good research to help people more specifically, especially with PCOS, now that we know this.
I'm glad to see this topic because I have PCOS, but it took us a lifetime to find out about it, because I'm 75. Until my daughter was diagnosed, did I realize I had had the same thing over my life. So I think it'd be good if young women knew about it. And you don't really hear people talk about it. You know, I don't hear people say, well, I have PCOS. Anybody else have it? You know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she was fortunate to be sent to an endocrinologist. I'm not sure what medicine she took. The other thing that she had was, sometimes you have a dorsal hump on your back, which she did.
Mm.
whether you read that, but the upper back gets larger, and basically. But about every symptom you said I've had, and usually you're seeing your gynecologist or someone, and they, you know, for me, I was put on hormones for 10 years for heavy bleeding. Well, I have breast cancer now, too. But this was before they said, don't get hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that we've gotten to take care of a problem in the end has caused other problems. So I would just love, and I don't know if you have to say something different for the people that are over menopause now, then you were basically talking about someone before menopause.
Yeah, you guys are proving the statistics wrong in a way, which makes me wonder, are the statistics accurate? Or are the people that are talking about PCOS, like here's my wondering, as a like as a researcher or an analyst, a lot of people in the age bracket of 26 to 44 talk about their infertility or, you know, have infertility, and that's what drives them to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they're diagnosed with PCOS. But you're absolutely right, right? If a woman is outside of childbearing age, but yet she struggled during childbearing age, and there wasn't as much talk about PCOS or awareness of it, then, yeah, we could have a whole lot of women statistically in their 50s, 60s, and 70s that have PCOS that have no idea they have PCOS.
Absolutely.
Because they're not menstruating anymore. And,
right.
You know, like you all kind of then recognized it for another reason and then went, oh, my gosh, that's what's been wrong with me for the last 30 or 40 or 50 years.
Yes, that exactly. And I had trouble getting pregnant, and I had a miscarriage, and I had an early baby, and, you know, that
I'm right there with you.
Really?
I was the same way to the lady that's speaking. I'm the 60-year-old. Yep.
Yeah.
And I've been to an endocrinologist as well to add to that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I wonder, right, if we could, this is like where I want to get on a national platform and go, how many women in their 50s and 60s and 70s had these symptoms when you were younger? And then let's get an androgen look at them, because you can actually go and get your androgen levels looked at. And you can get your insulin levels looked at. And to see how many people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s have PCOS that don't know what to do about it. And they don't even know they have it. They don't know what it is, and they don't know what to do about it, or they know what it is, and they're getting treated in a different way.
Well,
but yeah, you guys are proving that the stats a little bit different.
Yeah, I think you think, well, this is just the way I am, and other women are like this too. It's just like part of the life. If
yeah.
a doctor hasn't said anything, you just figure it's part of life.
Yeah.
Wendy,
but maybe,
I have a two-part question. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a two-part question. One was I had my first baby at 27 and had a pretty easy time getting pregnant with her, but not so much the one at 30. Is
mm-hmm.
it something that develops like later on you're okay for a while, then it can develop? That's part one. And then part two of my question, I'm 57 also, is when was this first starting to be diagnosed? Because I had super heavy bleeding, like starting in my 30s, and had to end up having an ablation.
Mm-hmm.
I had that too.
Uh-huh. I was going to say, lots of women with really heavy bleeds get an ablation or an IUD to help control those. And that's why when I said at the beginning of the call, like when I read that it was first described in 1721. I was pretty astounded because I don't feel like it's talked about a whole lot. So it was first described then. It's been in the medical journal since then. Now, that's a long time ago. We should have come a lot farther in PCOS diagnosis, treatment, and management since then, considering I don't, how can someone do the math? That, is that 300 years ago, 1721? 301 years ago? So in any case, it's been, that was the first it was talked about. And I will tell you professionally, when I first came into this profession, you know, 29 years ago, I don't remember hearing a whole lot about it. I've only heard more about it in the last, I'd say 20 years is where I've started to hear more about it, and then have more clients with it and hear more about it. It, you know, kind of a back and forth. So I don't know where it's been. It's been here, obviously. It's been in the medical journals. It's been noted. So whether it just hasn't really been looked at in the intense way that we've looked at some other diagnoses, I mean, that's my guess. I don't really understand, because it kind of doesn't make sense, right? If it's been around that long, why are we so far behind in our research in treatment and assessment? So that's kind of part two of your question to answer that. Part one, absolutely, it can develop at any point. Just because of, if you look at what impacts it, I mean, I talked about hereditary slash genetic impact, but we also know about epigenetics, right? And we've done some talks about epigenetics, because you can have the gene for something and it may not be expressed until you have something in your environment that makes it be expressed. So that can be stress, it can be sleep deprivation, it can be some facet of environmental toxin maybe you're exposed to, it can be a certain region of the country that you live in versus what you used to live in. I mean, epigenetics is a really interesting facet of genetics. And there's a ginormous book you can read about it if you're interested that I actually couldn't understand half of, so I put it down. But it's pretty fascinating when you just get the overview, because that's all I could do. But beyond that, so looking at that, right, it could develop at any point in time, because you might have the gene and then it might be expressed. But the other thing that we know increases someone's likelihood of development in PCOS is that weight gain, as I've talked about, and that increase in androgen production, that increase in insulin resistance. So that can happen to any of us at any point in time in our life, depending on what's going on in our life, the stress that we're under, if that changes our eating patterns, right? If our menstruation cycles are changing, what does that do? With respect to androgen production. And there's a variety of other things that can increase androgen production. One is what we eat, how we eat, why we eat, the amount we eat. And then hormone shifts can impact that as well. So, and I still don't think we're to the bottom of what impacts hormones. I don't think we have I hope one day we'll have a full spectrum of everything that impacts our hormones, but I still don't feel like we have enough data on environmental issues that impact our hormones and androgens.
I just wanted to add to the conversation a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm currently 44, but I was diagnosed back when I was around 32, 31.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty sure that since my first period at the age of 11, mm-hmm. I had struggles with it was super irregular, it was heavy bleeding, and I always had facial hair. Mm. So I'm pretty sure it was way back then, but I was not treated or addressed the issue until I was way into my 30s. So that's another problem that I think is happening. I don't think that many doctors are aware of this, or they're just diagnosing you with another situation,
mm-hmm.
Or they're just giving you pills and hopefully that will help you with your period, but it actually triggers other health consequences that are not good for your body. So that's all I wanted to add. So.
No, it's a great addition, and it's another great thought, right? Because the research I quoted was 26 to 44. We heard a number of women on the call that are above 44. But I also, when I was reading this, I also tended to wonder of how many adolescents and, you know, young 20s have these things where they're bleeding so heavy and they don't get their period but every 3 months, and they get facial hair and acne, and yeah, they're typically speaking, they walk into an OBGYN and are given a birth control pill. And sometimes those work and sometimes those don't.
There were days that I could not get out of my bed or go to school.
Mm-hmm.
It was that bad. So it does disrupt your daily life. So it's really hard when
Absolutely.
You're that young, especially in high school and intermediate school, and everybody's having fun or doing sports and everything, and there's things that you can't do because your body is not letting you do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually think, I really think and believe, and my daughter and I have had this conversation because she's 17, and she's had time periods in her life, and we're just about getting out of this, but time periods in her life where she was radically irregular, and we know a lot more about why now. But the realistically, for many girls, I feel like we do not give girls the grace to be able to stay home from school on the tough day or two of their period. And we don't let them slow down, and we don't let them take a break, even us as, you know, women. When is that really honored? And so, yeah, we're, you know, stuck at home in the bed and feeling terrible because we've missed tests or whatever it is, you know, and the culture doesn't understand any of that. So there's a whole other kind of section there to consider for girls that have altered menstruation and super heavy bleeds. Which can absolutely be a sign of PCOS. So, you know, I am sorry that you had to go through that. It is a really tough role as a teenager and a young adult. Like, we need anything more to be tough during that age. You really don't need anything extra on your plate, no pun intended, during that age. So I am sorry that happened to you, and I hope now that you're able to put more and more of the pieces together to help your body heal from here forward, so you don't have to struggle as much, and you can find some freedom from the PCOS.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, share it with a friend. Rate, review, and subscribe. You never know who you'll help become the next overcomer.